They spread a subtle aroma throughout the room, as pleasant as it was unobtrusive. Universal love is the life of the whole creation. The secret of evil lies alone in the loss of love. To love means to be in the light. Inner blindness, ignorance, and depravity are all the consequences of a failure of love. The essence of the divine being is love, and the whole creation derives from it. With these words, Raphael began to speak of things that riveted our attention completely. The bad, he proceeded to say, consists of not staying within the power of love. For those who are within the power of love, it is not hard to walk on the unending path of understanding that leads to the Creator, the deepest longing of every created being. For the individual who is not within the power of love, and therefore is within the power of evil, true understanding is difficult and even impossible. The more one abides in the light of understanding, the easier is the inner actualization of love. The more one persists in staying within the force of evil, and therefore far from the light of understanding, the harder it is, ultimately impossible it is, to be within the power of love. Unfortunately, on earth there is little love and little understanding. That is the reason why mankind must go through so much trouble and sorrow, and must realize the error and delusion of the force of evil, before it succeeds in finding the true path to the Creator, the source of all goodness. Then Raphael spoke a great truth. While you are in darkness, he said, you make everything complicated. Simplicity is one of the best paths to the light. Therefore, it has been said to you, that in order to enter into the kingdom of heaven, you must become as a little child. That which is great and deep, is always very simple. Now Orthon chose to speak, and said, many things will be shown you. We will proceed simply and systematically, so that you will have a sound basis of fundamental truths that will help you to become accustomed to higher realities. After that, we will invite you to look over the starship with us, and to celebrate together. Firkin begged us to prepare our hearts and minds to receive fully all that we would see and hear aboard this starship. Look in this direction, said Kalna, as she pointed to the wall on our left, opposite the table with the flowers. See what will be shown there. We turned, and all watched intently the place she had indicated. The room lights gradually dimmed, creating a mood of intimacy. Tina's and Paul's eager anticipation could be seen in their expressions. From a certain place in the room came a sort of smoke, like steam building up to form a little gray cloud. The cloud began to change its form until the outline of three persons came into view. We watched with astonishment this unbelievable transformation, which seemed to arise out of thin air. Gradually, we saw the outline assume the appearance of a man, a woman, and a child. They were really there, before our eyes, yet, at the same time, they seemed like figures in a movie, or in a tableau. Next, the cloud fashioned an outdoor scene, including trees, grass, flowers, and shrubs. The man sat on a large stone. The woman stood beside him, dressed in typical country fashion. The child played on the ground nearby. It was a country scene, perhaps a small family outing. The figures, which had been in shades of grey up to this time, although clearly possessing depth, began now to gradually take on colour. At the same time, the whole scene became brighter and more vivid, and we noted that, at the same time, the room was getting darker. I was more and more fascinated with what I saw. The man stood up and spoke to the woman, who, we assumed, was his wife. The child was busy playing with some toy, and paid little heed to his parents nearby. We heard the harmonious voice of Ilmoth calling our attention to something. Now, she said, we will show you something in this family scene which we are very anxious that you should understand. Pay close attention. The color of all the objects in the scene at first grew brighter, then gradually diminished. The clothing of the three persons seemed to dissolve in a meld of pastel shades, then rearrange themselves until we could see three well-dressed persons, a man, woman and child who were the same, and yet not the same as before. The flesh tones seemed now to have a shimmering light blue quality, as if lit up by some inner radiant source. The bodies seemed somehow lighter than the previous ones. It was as if two bodies were superimposed, one over the other. We could clearly discern the separate bodies of each of the three persons, yet they appeared as one. This remarkable illusion repeated itself, and still other bodies came into view, exactly similar in outward appearance, yet distinguishable through subtle changes in color and luminosity. I could observe, in this remarkable stereoscopic display, that the deeper the layer that was being revealed, the more luminous it was, yet the light from the inner bodies did not prevent our seeing the outer bodies clearly. I counted seven in all. The innermost one was pure white, and seemed to pulse with rhythmic emanations. With each pulse, light streamed forth and flooded all the other bodies, right up to the last, flesh-colored one on the surface. "Look closely," exclaimed Ilmoth. "Observe also the plants and the rocks. They were undergoing the same transformation as the persons. I had never before seen such a display. Everything had such a lifelike depth, richness of color and symmetry of form, and such a rhythmic progression from one light manifestation to the next, that I was astounded. I could not possibly have imagined such a thing." "In this way," explained Ilmoth, "you can visually comprehend the various dimensions of the life force in man, in the world of plants, and in the mineral kingdom. These seven dimensions may also be subdivided into groups of three similar states of being." I looked again and saw that the first three bodies, which were closer to the surface, appeared particularly like one another with respect to density and degree of luminosity. The next three were brighter, and seemed to be finer in texture and detail the deeper they lay. The innermost one, pure white, was especially bright, and from it rhythmic waves of living light bathed each of the other bodies. It became clear to me that no method we have on Earth could so effectively demonstrate all these living realities, and that this unbelievable scene gave my mind insight into possibilities that would have never revealed themselves under ordinary circumstances. "The outermost body," said Ilmoth, "is the material body. The others are not of material energy, but of cosmic, or astral energy, as your teachers on Earth call it. With each of these bodies man can live in different worlds and dimensions, and on the higher developed planets. The outermost body dies, and the next one beneath it is fully prepared to adapt itself to the energy field of its new surroundings. That is what happens at the time of death, but, in reality, it is only a birth with the new body in a higher dimension, in a higher world of the same level of development as the newly won body. Since the dimensions are very numerous, the number of possible bodies within man are not just seven, but many more. We show you only seven in order to make it easier to understand." I was completely absorbed in learning about these wonderful new realities. I heard Tina's voice call out, "The beauty of the innermost glowing form is too marvelous for words. It is that, especially, that we wanted to help you better understand," Kalno responded, taking up the conversation at this point. "The pure, white body, which sends forth waves of life energy to the astral bodies, right up to the material body, is the visible manifestation of what you call spirit. In the scriptures, you will find it said that man is a unity of body, soul, and spirit. Thereby, it is understood that body refers to the mortal body, soul to the astral body, and spirit to that essential part of man which is immortal and therefore never dies, as it is the seat of life and of consciousness. The spirit," Ilmoth interjected, "has the capability of living anywhere in the whole universe, provided only that it may not go beyond the boundary known as Heaven's Gate when clothed in an astral body, and that it stay in a cosmic world at an appropriate level of development." Thurkin explained further, "The brothers from the essential universe, such as we, have already developed the spiritual body, and therefore normally live in the wonderful worlds of light of the ultra-cosmic universe. The brothers from these higher realms, often referred to in the scriptures as angels, or the Lord, can travel in cosmic dimensions, and can clothe themselves with cosmic bodies when it is needed. On the other hand, the brothers who are not so far developed that they can free themselves from cosmic love and cross the boundary beyond which lies the eternal universe of light, have the possibility of making journeys to worlds at stages of development beneath their own. This they can do freely, motivated by their own understanding or their sense of obligation, a task undertaken either on their own initiative, or as an assignment entrusted to them to fulfill. In order to gain experience at a higher level, as you are now, you must trust us, who have already gone beyond the heavenly boundary, and therefore have the knowledge that allows us to bring you opportunities for travel to worlds that are above your stage of development. Then, Paul broke in, may we say that you might be called brothers of the whole universe, and the others, who cannot yet free themselves from the cosmic body, might be called brothers of the cosmos. Exactly right, answered Orthon. Our knowledge is spiritual, and that encompasses also cosmic knowledge. On the other hand, there are brothers who have a great deal of cosmic knowledge, but are poor in spiritual understanding. One must always use the cosmic powers within the framework of understanding of the spiritual, or mystical powers, and that means to have trust in the Creator, who works through his children of light. One who works only through the cosmic powers has no guarantee that he does what is right, and will not result in negative consequences. If, however, he works together with those who are in the light, who are always under the guidance of the spiritual forces, and are acquainted with the marvelous ways in which the Creator accomplishes his purposes, in silence and in power, then he becomes an enabler in the universal plan of love and salvation under God's providence. Such a person will not be in danger of falling into error. No one can, of himself, have unlimited knowledge and wisdom. Raphael gently called our attention to what was now taking place in the animated color tableau, which at this moment portrayed the three figures in a garden. The husband and wife had evidently had a falling out. The husband was gesticulating wildly, giving unrestrained expression to his emotions. We could hear their voices. He was hurling accusations at his wife, which, although I could not understand them, seemed to have something to do with the child. The child continued playing, and paid little heed to the heated argument going on between his parents. Watch, now, said Raphael, and you will see the effect of anger on the bodies and souls of these unfortunate people. The man's invectives grew stronger as he mercilessly blamed his wife for imagined faults and shortcomings. He was infuriated, while she maintained a stunned silence. As I was watching the figure of the man, the outlines of his body became distorted, as if altered by some rough force. The harmony of the lines was badly disturbed. The inner spiritual body lost its snow-white splendor. It turned darker, emitting spasmodic showers of muddy fragments that penetrated the other bodies, agitating them with abrupt changes of brightness, form and texture. The husband was shouting now, while his poor wife was in tears. His spiritual body, at first spotted and flecked, was now almost dark brown. His whole being was saturated with this unsightly coloration, and his figure seemed to be shrunken and deformed. The outer, material body, although the vessel containing all the other bodies whose beauty and radiance had been so badly affected, suffered the least damage of all. Now, waves of this dark disharmonious life energy could be seen emanating from the man, going out in ever-broadening circles all around him. They penetrated the woman who soon took on the same characteristics, her life force growing darker, and her spiritual, cosmic and astral bodies becoming distorted. What you are seeing, explained Raphael, happens to every human being who allows anger to enter into his consciousness. His life energy becomes dim and disfigured. This disorientation spills over from the spiritual body to all the other bodies, right up to the material body, and all suffer thereby. The life energy of every single being is, through his environment, intimately bound up with the life energies of other beings of his kind, and therefore he will be helped by the brothers, if he lives a good, well-disciplined life, but he does harm to all other members of the human race, if he lives a bad life with no sense of responsibility toward his fellow man. All creation is at every moment in a lively reciprocal relationship with all other parts of creation. All exists in reality, and the finer the reality is, the more it is imbued with life, thought, and its forms, and that which you call fantasy or imagination, has a reality or expressive power greater than matter alone can possibly possess. I would add that those persons still bound to materialistic thinking would be astonished to learn how great an influence their thoughts, feelings, and emotions have on the energy of the material elements of their environment. But, since they view everything through the lens of materialism, they create for themselves an illusion which makes matter appear to be very real and solid, and every finer reality, inconsequential and empty. Meanwhile, the husband in the scene continued in his tirade, and the aforementioned energy contagion of badwill now flooded over the child, although he continued to act as though he paid no attention to the strife going on between his parents. The surrounding plant world now gave evidence of coming under the influence of the dark disorder of successive waves of negative energies, and this effect also penetrated the rocks, the air, and the ground. Even we began to be affected by this disagreeable onslaught against our original sense of well-being. "How frightful!" exclaimed Dina. "Absolutely terrible." The scene underwent a change, and gradually returned to its original state. Now the husband embraced his wife tenderly and dried her tears. The child went over to his parents and laughed with joy. Not only the three human figures, but also the plant and mineral world of their surroundings underwent a sort of transformation. Waves of light and color bestowed new life and harmony on everything they touched. We felt joy and happiness return to us, even as the fearfulness of the recent experience began to subside. The scene dissolved bit by bit, and the cloud of vapor faded to gray, then gradually disappeared altogether. The room light became as before. Raphael and the others smiled at us like good friends who return again after a painful separation. I thought for a moment about the trip from Earth to the starship where I was now with Tina, Paul and the brothers, and my heart was full of joy. Raphael took up the conversation again. "If all children of God the Father used the precious gift of freedom which He gave them to follow the infinite paths of all love, and had entrusted themselves solely to the beneficence of His universal laws, then it would not be necessary to experience life in cosmic dimensions that are so very restricted in comparison with the infinite universe beyond the heavenly boundaries. As there was a rebellion long ago that persuaded many souls that man could manage his affairs without God, or the help of those who were obedient to God, the spirit of human pride arose, and the propensity toward undisciplined, selfish action. Therefore, knowing that others would emulate this bad behavior, the Father created dimensions with narrower boundaries, namely the cosmic, astral and material worlds, which, while equally wonderful, being the work of His hands and reflecting the beauty and harmony of heaven, nevertheless were restricted worlds. There, many of His children were tempted to substitute egotism for all-embracing love, evil for good, cruelty for kindness toward brothers and sisters. They learned to follow the way of wrong action instead of right, of hatred instead of love, spiritual blindness instead of true understanding, which would have led to abundant life. Therefore, matter was created, so that the spirit and consciousness, which are integrally joined with the material body, would have a wall of protection around themselves. You have seen that the material body is the least sensitive, and moderates and restrains disturbances in the finer bodies. If those children had no material bodies, and also no astral bodies, then their souls, which sometime want to test the ways of evil, would perceive the consequences in a much more unprotected and painful manner. It is important that one become convinced of the futility and danger of evil during this material life, for otherwise he will experience it in fuller measure, more painfully, in the finer dimensions of higher reality. It is necessary that man learn to understand the loving kindness of the Father, who does not deny freedom to those of His children who are not faithful, but has made it possible for them to learn in an environment more protected from suffering. Suffering is, in itself, a means of healing, Anguish is the voice of the Father calling his children home, suffering is purification and love. Until the last, lost child of the Father has returned, there will always be suffering. You saw the effect of remorse when this husband realized he had greatly wronged his wife and done harm to the sensitive soul of his child. The pain that arose in his consciousness was a living energy released from his spirit, that restored harmony and order to his wife, his child, and to his own being. When goodness and love again predominate among earth children, said Kalna tenderly, then your spirits will release a wonderful life energy which will give light to your understanding and warmth to your hearts. Then will the beneficent power which radiates from within you heal all the brokenness of your spiritual, mental, and material condition. Even the animals will become more tame, the plants more beneficial, the minerals more pure. You cannot imagine how very dependent the whole living web of the environment is on your consciousness. The sentient being truly determines the composition and quality of the living environment of his own world. Everything is a living reality, every emotion, all your wishes, thoughts or feelings, and, likewise, all of your suffering. To neglect this is to prolong your journey back to the light by many hundreds of years. Every child of the Father will come to realize, of his own free will and through the power of his conviction, the truth of the good, and the delusion of evil. We will always help you until the time comes when the Father is again able to rejoice in your perfect love and trust, for he alone is the Creator God, the highest source of all love. Every thought has its own form, its own color, its own sound, its unique aroma, and its particular meaning. This is true for everything that lives within the human spirit. The children of the Father can create either a paradise or a state of unending hell. The Father will always strive to draw them again to himself, and we will be his true children and co-workers, until all become convinced of the truth and the justice and the beauty of his ways. Firkin looked deeply into my eyes, and I could tell that he knew the question in my mind. Yes, he said, with a tone of finality. Of course, all this will come to an end. The children of the Father who persist in wrongdoing will soon be compelled to see things in a new light. They will have caused so much anguish on earth that even the blind will see and the deaf will hear. Men's hearts will grow out of their thousands of years old state of intransigence, and they will long for the light. Then the Father will enjoy a feast, such as has never before been in all creation, because the lost son has finally returned home to his Father's house. It is written, Raphael added thoughtfully, that only the sons of perdition will be lost. This causes infinite grief for the Father, and is a sorrow to us as well. These recalcitrant persons do not want to learn their lesson, but they will no longer be able to harm others. For them, the whole plan of love and salvation will have borne no fruit. None of us can put ourselves in God's place. He will have provided for even such as these. But, woe unto them, who turn away from the infinite mercy, compassion and justice of the Father. These impenitent brothers ought never to forget that there is for them at any moment grace, forgiveness, and love. All that has happened on earth in these thousands of years, Raphael said with great sadness, in the long history of blood, suffering and injustice in the cosmos, will serve as a horrible example, in which error in all its many forms is to be found. This condition has now come very close to the limits the Father has established in his loving heart. He will no longer allow the suffering of the innocent, the time of retribution has come and all will be judged with his perfect justice. Tina was earnest and attentive. Paul looked at Raphael with friendly curiosity. Look, now, said Ilmuth, we have something else to show you. Again the room light dimmed. The great cloud appeared, quickly took on color, and before us we saw the figure of a child who, in her material body, was severely crippled. The finer bodies, however, radiated in lustrous splendor, creating an impression so altogether charming and harmonious, that Tina uttered an ecstatic cry of admiration. I reflected on the irony of this striking contradiction. The inner beauty of the child was more overpowering than the outward impression of her being sadly crippled. When the consciousness of man in its function as energy, and life dispenser, becomes disordered, and thus brings about these unhappy conditions on your planet, said Ilmuth, then we are often the ones who take possession of these bodies. You are not aware of it, but almost always it is an angel who comes down to dwell and suffer in a crippled body or a sick mind, to take on an important and effective assignment, which works to the advantage of the Earth brothers in their great need. She was silent. I was shaken by what I had seen and heard. My love for these brothers grew greater than before. The spiritual body of the poor child shone forth with indescribable beauty. This wonderful light poured softly and continuously through the other bodies and into the surrounding space. These are the ones, she said, who light up your world. When you on Earth one day understand these things, there will no longer be those who accuse God of creating hardships in order to torment people, but rather you will blame your evil ways and hardened hearts, and give thanks to those who, though blameless, wanted to bear your burdens, rather than theirs, in order to save you. How, otherwise, would you make sense out of the blood of the martyrs, or all the good works and love of past years? What would be the meaning of the sacrifice of the one who died upon a cross, in order to lift up the whole truth before your eyes, and to teach you the greatest lesson in universal love that was ever given on earth? The moment of truth draws nearer, and as soon as the veil of unknowing, which was necessary in order to ameliorate the pain, is withdrawn, each person will know whether he was born on earth to be saved, or to save others, after he himself finds salvation. For even the angels, when born on earth as men or women, must first be saved, and then they will have the power to save others, while they continue to carry out their difficult mission. Some of us choose to bear suffering in a martyr's body, rather than allow you to experience to the full the ravaging work of evil. It is written, you should not judge. Judge not, but abide in love, for that is the only guarantee of victory of good over evil. Put your trust in God and in His children who work for your healing, in love. Be righteous and unassuming. Ilmuth ceased speaking. The smoke cloud lost its color and quickly dissolved, taking with it the winsome figure of the little handicapped child. The light returned to the Roan in the starship. I sought to fix in my mind clear recollections of this fantastic experience. Raphael invited us to follow him. Orthon and Firkin came with us. We visited various sections of this giant, luxurious space liner. In one room we enjoyed a delectable drink together. Then Kalna sang for us, and we listened to music that was so exquisitely beautiful that Tina was moved to tears. Our hearts were filled with joy and peace, and the certainty of the brothers' unconditional love. Then they led us through the passageway into the flying disc that was to bring us back to Earth. Again, it was Raphael, Orthon and Firkin who accompanied us on the trip. The time will come, said Ilmuth, while Kalna smiled at us, when we will no longer need to part. All the brothers of Earth who wish to, will be able to fly with us in space. It will suffice for them to have the wish to do it, but, above all, they must know that they are children of the Heavenly Father's love. Together we will visit new worlds and explore distant regions of space. We will continually undertake new missions of love and learning for other brothers, who wish to progress rapidly to a higher stage of development. And then, we will stand face to face with the Father, for we will move out beyond Heaven's gate. Be assured of that, Kalna said with finality, for it is the truth. We all embraced in a final farewell. We took our places in the flying disc, whose atmosphere had to be adjusted to prepare us for the return journey to Earth. Our hearts were still in space, on the ray ship, with all its magic charm of color, luminescence, and tranquility. The disc brought us back to the place where we had been picked up just a few hours before. It was approximately 6 o'clock in the morning. Chapter 13, Sojourn in Space. Now I will tell you about some other extraordinary experiences that Tina, Paul and I had the privilege of sharing on another trip into space with the visitors from the stars. After we encountered the round object at its landing place, in accordance with telepathically received instructions, we boarded it and were lifted into space. the flying disc rose in the limitless void? Millions upon millions of stars came into view, and they seemed much brighter than they would have appeared from Earth. They blazed up like so many colored flares in the distance. My excitement was such that I was touched with fear. I felt so infinitesimally small in comparison with this magnificent spectacle.